As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like Antoine when he
welcome
to
so tell me why you mad. Anything is possible! The Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan. And I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King. Ladies and gentlemen, and we are coming to you live on a Friday morning. The morning after a thrilling overtime game rematch of the finals between the Boston Celtics and Golden State Warriors, the Celtics managed to pull this one out in overtime, winning, I am blanking on the final score right now, 121-118, in which, Jay, this was a pretty ugly basketball game in terms of just shot making and what the Celtics have done on offense this entire year. I'm looking at their shot profile right now. So many missed shots in the paint. So many missed threes for the Celtics. And it's just rather remarkable how the hell they came back and managed to put themselves in this game. Just an absolutely wild last two minutes of the game and overtime. I would describe it as an ugly win. Joe Mazzulla refuses to say there's any bad wins or anything like that, but what was your biggest takeaway from just a kind of banana lands game against the Warriors?
It was kind of a baffling win. Like, I'm still not really sure how the Celtics won that game. Because their mistakes, it wasn't like they made all their mistakes early and then played like perfect basketball down the stretch. Oh, no. Tatum had three turnovers in the last 3.5 minutes. Including, like, and everyone was just bad. It was just bad turnovers. Al Horford had two huge blocks, and then each time Tatum just gave the ball right back. Once Jordan Poole just picked it off and went in for a dunk. The other time, Tatum got stripped from behind, and Andrew Wiggins ended up with a wide open corner three, and the Celtics were really lucky that he missed it. But they just kept kind of plugging away. Played a lot of defense. They limited Steph Curry and Klay Thompson throughout the fourth quarter and overtime. Like, just really, really did a good job on the defensive end. And then Al Horford was just really good. And Jaylen Brown hit a three to bail him out at the end of regulation. They made a lot of winning plays, but they also just made a lot of stupid plays.
They also made a lot of losing plays. Like, they would just follow up winning play, losing play. Marcus Smart tried to throw the ball away. I'm not sure Jaylen Brown actually saved that ball at the end of the game. But, yeah, like, I think they really did win this game on their defense. They held the Warriors to 17 points in the fourth quarter, which is just incredibly impressive.
They were 7 for 22 shooting in the fourth. And I think 2 for 6 in overtime. So,
yeah, and they're just like a constant struggle on defense. Just the plays that are so impressive is when Steph drives, relocates, and just hits these dagger threes. He did that a couple of times against the Celtics. And then even in just with how much attention you have to give to Curry, just like two-man games with Draymond and Clay and just Jordan Poole. Like, they have so much movement on their offense that I thought the Celtics did an incredibly impressive job on the defensive end of just slowing down the Warriors. With that being said, like, still, I'm still just confused about that final 2 minutes. Like, they're down four. Steph kind of goes for that FU three. He misses, and it's like an easy leak out for Tatum. And then there's just kind of like wild Al block. And then that Jaylen Brown three, which after they had not been making any threes for, you know, most of that fourth quarter, they missed so many open threes. It felt like down the stretch that it was just a grid. I guess you describe it as gritty, but like for as many winning plays as they make, I'm going to say it again, they made that many losing plays. It just happened that it kind of worked out for them in the end.
And it didn't start like right at the end. The whole fourth quarter, they just kind of had a lot of plays. It just kind of left you scratching your head. There was one play when Tatum got Kevon Looney on him, and Looney is like obviously a big dude, and went in the post and tried to fade away and like just missed the rim by like 3 feet. Jalen, he just let the ball slip away with like 8 minutes left, like just didn't catch it. Didn't seem too focused on catching it. Tatum like stole, he intercepted a pass, made a great play to do that, and then just traveled on Stephen Curry in transition. Like, it was just kind of some really bad mistakes. I do think it's probably overreacting to say they have demons against the Warriors, but it feels like they have demons against the Warriors. The way Tatum played, the way their decision making just kind of disappears sometimes against Golden State. Golden State, obviously they're like an average defense this year, but they can really ramp it up, and they play with a lot of physicality, and they have Draymond Green and Kevon Looney and Andrew Wiggins. A lot of guys that really make an impact at the rim. But
that's the craziest thing about the Warriors. I think you have to give the Warriors a lot of credit. And I would be, I think, incredibly frustrated if I was a Warriors fan, because they should not be, 22 and 23 right now, just given how much talent they have on that team. But like their defense, especially around the rim, I don't know if it's like some sort of curse, or it's just the Warriors have extreme talent in Looney and Draymond especially. But like the Celtics just turned into entirely different basketball players when getting into the paint and approaching the rim against the Warriors. And I think the Warriors have incredibly great, good hands. They're very good at going straight up, but the Celtics smoked so many bunnies, and then also just like had a real tough time of getting good looks against the Warriors. I think they were like trying to get some contact and didn't get as many foul calls as they wanted. But the Warriors are just so incredibly tough at the rim. And I think they do a really good job of funneling you to the rim, because the Celtics are normally launching threes, and that's just not, they did not take nearly as many threes in this game as they kind of normally do. And so I just think the Warriors defense deserves a lot of credit, one, for showing up on the road, which apparently they have not done all year. But there's just something special about what the Warriors do in terms of their rim protection that just makes it like, I don't know if it's a boogeyman in Celtics heads, but they are just feel like a completely different basketball team in the paint and in the restricted area when they're playing the Warriors.
Yeah, and that's something the Warriors do. They have they are allowing the fewest amount of shots at the rim by far. Like, they're head and shoulders above everybody else in that category. And so that's part of what they do. And to score against them, you have to really play through contact. You have to be physical. You have to know, like, Draymond Green is going to be contesting you at the rim. And it's just like a constant battle against them. And that's when they're locked in. They just reach another level. And obviously they see the Celtics and get locked in and play with a level of physicality they haven't mustered all the time this season. It was a fun game. It was a really fun game to watch, but also like just a bizarrely badly played game at times. The even the end of overtime, like what were they doing? How they almost gave away that game at the end of overtime after going up 8 points and having some really good possessions to do so. Then it was like they became a high school team, like a just throwing the ball all over the gymnasium.
I'm pretty sure Marcus Smart like threw the ball out of bounds. I don't think Jaylen Brown actually saved that ball. It was just really like being up 7 or being up 8 with that much time left. There's just like should be no reason for the Warriors to get back in that game, but it was pretty wild. I think we have to give a lot of credit to Jaylen Brown, especially for his play in that overtime. I just talked about how much the Celtics struggled in the paint and getting good shots off. But Jaylen really came up with some huge buckets in OT after pretty much struggling the whole game and not really being a presence offensively. It's his first game back from injury, but I thought in overtime, he just kind of bullied his way into the paint and made some pretty tough floaters or just like push shots. And that was like a huge kind of momentum swing for the Celtics because Jason Tatum at that point had played the entire second half. I think he looked exhausted. He had some of the just terrible turnovers where he just kind of threw the ball to no one. They needed some sort of scoring punch there. And I thought Jaylen Brown coming in and just knocking down those shots, just those two shots in the paint was huge for the Celtics, just for them to get out and get some points in the overtime.
It was kind of hilarious. Tatum played the entire, I think it was the last 41 minutes that he played, which is kind of wild for a regular season game. It was yeah, easily the most minutes he's played this season, as 48 minutes would probably be for most guys. And it was just funny because they try to downplay the importance a little bit of seeing the Warriors. And then you just see they were just lying straight to our faces. Al Horford's out there doing the too little celebration. Like, Al Horford doesn't do shit like that. Every once in a while, he'll like flex or something normally in a playoff game. But he was out there doing the too little celebration. And I do think the way he started the game, Horford, was really important. Celtics started their big last season starting lineup for the first time all season because of injuries and whatnot. And the Warriors went small. It was like really weird contrast. And Horford just took Wiggins to the post. And Horford, we haven't seen a post up hardly ever this season. And for him to be capable of doing that against Wiggins, who's not a small guy, like that's a big, big, sturdy wing defender. So that was big. That was important for the Celtics, like to just have that level of physicality from the start. But it was clear it wasn't another game, though. I mean, Tatum played 41 straight minutes. He had a really weird game because he made a lot of bad decisions. Obviously didn't shoot the ball well. 7 turnovers. Like, continues to have his struggles scoring against the Warriors efficiently. But the rebounds, man, like 19 rebounds, yeah, are huge.
He had a bad game and also finished with 34-19, like is which is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, and like 19 rebounds is just big. And I thought, while we're on the topic of rebounds, like Robert Williams, the way he dominated the offensive glass was so important for them. And that's one way that they're going to need to play when teams switch. And Robert Williams just absolutely punished the Warriors on the offensive glass. I think I've brought up this stat on the podcast before, but when he's in the lineup, they just bash teams on the offensive glass. And when he's out of the lineup, they don't offensive rebound at all. Like, the difference is totally crazy. He absolutely changes everything about the way they are on the offensive glass simply by being on the court and jumping around and chasing down the ball. And that's a big deal, I think, for their offense. And that's partly why they were able to overcome shooting just 39.8%. Like, there were a lot of times when they were having droughts, they were having trouble scoring the ball, and Robert Williams was out there giving them extra opportunities. And, like, that was the first time they won while shooting less than 42% all season. They were 0-5 before that. So winning ugly and doing it against the Warriors, like, as many baffling decisions as they made, it could be a good sign that at least they don't need to have that crisp offensive night anymore. Their defense can carry them. Their offensive rebounding with Robert Williams is just different. They're starting to create turnovers again, which is a big deal. They didn't force any turnovers at all at the beginning of the season. So in a lot of ways, they're improving around the margins to help them win those games.
Yeah, Celtics finished with 18 offensive rebounds, 22 second chance points. Definitely a huge advantage for them. They did start the kind of the traditional starting lineup, the two big lineup. And personally, I did not think it looked great on the offensive end. Like, the spacing just looked pretty difficult. And they definitely, Joe Mazzulla went away from that in the second half, where he kind of staggered Rob Williams and Al Horford and played Malcolm Brogdon a lot more. What did you think of that kind of the two big lineup? And like, it definitely helped with that physicality and that, I guess, on the boards early. But I think just for a while there, especially in the first quarter and some points of the third quarter, it really felt like it slowed down the offense and kind of screwed up the spacing for them.
Yeah. But I mean, defensively, that's just such a good lineup. Like, it's so hard to score on those guys when they have those five players on the court. And the offense, like, it's not going to be the same. It's definitely not going to be the same as it is when Al Horford is in and they're playing five out, or when just Robert Williams is in and they have all ball handlers and creators around him. But yeah, it wasn't the best night from that group.
Well, some possessions where, like, with that group, the possession is just Rob Williams in the corner, and that feels like a wasted possession. If you're going to have the two bigs in, it feels like you either need to be playing with some pick and roll with Rob at the top of the, like, as the screener, or playing like dribble handoff games with Rob, or getting Rob involved in the action, because any possession where it's just Robert Williams in the corner feels like a kind of a win for the defense. And I think you're right that their defensive capability of that lineup is important. And so they're going to need to figure out how to play with that lineup. But I thought it was interesting that, like, you play those two bigs, then we see a stretch of Luke Kornet. And Luke Kornet, like, I think, did a decent job, but they certainly were attacking him there when he was in the game. And so I just thought it was an interesting dynamic that like, they kind of started with that lineup, and then as soon as they got to the kind of the second half and overtime, we saw a lot more Malcolm Brogdon, which felt like a more effective lineup for them in the second half, just because they needed that spacing, and especially against, like, kind of the switching that the Warriors did. It's not like they're going to throw a bunch of post-ups to their two bigs, and so it felt like they just needed to get some smaller guys out there and create a little bit more space for drives and things like that.
Yeah, and it felt like the Warriors really were going to make Horford and Robert Williams be the ones to do stuff.
Did Robert Williams get told before the game that he's allowed to shoot? Like, I feel like this was the most aggressive we've seen Robert Williams on offense in a while. And I say that only because I think he actually took a jump shot from about 6 feet, and I'm just not used to seeing him do that.
Yeah, he hasn't. I feel like last year he took a few, like the occasional 12 footer or so. We haven't really seen him try that this year. I thought there were some good moments where they found Rob, where they found Al inside. But again, like, the Warriors just take away so much at the rim. And even with a much bigger lineup than the Warriors, the Celtics weren't really able to get to what they wanted to inside. And that I think that's probably the disappointing part, the most disappointing part about Tatum's 9-for-27 performance. And he was able to get to the line, which was a big deal. And being able to rebound, to get to the line, to get some points like that, just kind of manufacture stuff, that's a big deal. But the Warriors have guys that he should be able to overpower. And they went small, and they had Jordan Poole on the court, and they had Curry. And I know Curry's a much better defender than probably most people realize. But the Celtics' inability to get Tatum matched up on one of those guys in space is evident when they play the Warriors. And it's just the Warriors, they make it really hard to get to what you want. And it's really impressive watching them play. They play with a lot of physicality on the perimeter. Even Jordan Poole, I thought, like, was just really fighting, making sure that the Celtics weren't being able to set clean screens. Like, they just made all that stuff hard. And so you really appreciate the Warriors' defense when you see them up close and locked in. Like, they make every single thing you do difficult. And the Celtics had to fight through a lot. They had to fight through their own terrible mistakes. They had to fight through a huge first half from Klay Thompson. The end of the first half, it just started to feel like a finals game all over again, didn't it? It was like Celtics really controlled the first half, like most of the first half, and then Klay goes bonkers, and then Tatum has a chance to push it, to extend a 2-point lead to either 4 or 5 after they get a steal with like 5 seconds left. And instead, Steph comes up with a steal, and then you knew it was in. The second he got the ball, you knew it was going in. And I think Robert Williams, his reaction spoke so much to how good Steph is, how ridiculous he is, and how incredible he is at shots from anywhere. Because Steph Curry was behind half court with like a second left, and Robert Williams was panicked, like just racing 100 miles an hour to try to get back to Steph Curry. If you watch that play over again, just watch Robert Williams, because he knows he can't let Steph shoot that shot. And it went in, and it just felt like a finals game, the way the Celtics were executing, the way the Warriors were doing impressive stuff. Steph went over and had a celebration that irked you, Packard.
I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, act like you've been there before, Steph. You've hit plenty of 46-footers in your career
to be fair,
at the buzzer.
To be fair, I feel like he was acting like he'd been there before. And he was letting the Celtics crowd know that he had been there before.
And to be fair,
been
that
there
is
before in that building, just tearing their hearts out.
That is a very good point. In fact, that is exactly how he acted. He acted like, I'm pretty sure that people are alleging that he mouthed like, "This is my town." I did not care for the run around the gym for a buzzer beater at the half. I wasn't mad. Don't put it in the newspaper that I was mad, but it was just like
absolutely fuming.
I was a little bit ticked off by that. It's funnier in retrospect now because the Celtics won. But yeah, Steph is absolutely insane, and just trying to like follow him around the entire game just seems exhausting. There were so many buckets where it's just like other guys on the Warriors got shots just because the Celtics had to pay so much attention to him. There's just one thing I want to bring up before we get to the listener callers right now, and just talking about the Celtics attack and trying to get Tatum to operate in space. It just feels like, with the switching and the physicality of the Warriors defense that you mentioned, it's pretty difficult to get Tatum just like isolated on a guy and space it. But I do think the Celtics did a pretty good job of trying to get Tatum touches where he can attack and where he could be dangerous. I thought there was like a lot of kind of Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum two-man game where they got the switch and got Tatum the ball in the paint, not necessarily operating in space, but in situations where Tatum could use his physicality to just draw contact and get to the free throw line and just get in an advantageous position. I just continue to think that Tatum, whether or not the defense is switching or whether or not they play kind of more of a traditional pick and roll defense, Tatum setting that initial screen and then getting him to the ball as he's moving towards the basket continues to be just a consistent source of offense for the Celtics. And I just like, it feels like the go-to thing where it's like, we don't know exactly what to do here, but you put the ball in Marcus and Tatum's hands in that situation, and they'll generally make the right read and figure out a way to get in an advantageous position.
Yeah, and there was one play, I think it was Horford's three in the overtime, when they did just that. It was
the Horford three was like they added another wrinkle in there. They brought in a Jaylen Brown like double screen as well. That was a brilliantly drawn up play.
Yeah. So Brown sets the back screen, gets them switched, Thompson onto Tatum, and then Brown uses his physicality to kind of shield Wiggins off and cut to the paint. And then they draw Draymond and get Horford a three. That was the best play probably the Celtics made the entire night. Like, from a standpoint of how are they defending us? How do we need to read this, react to it, and work together to do it? That was thinking the game, and that was getting something that you wanted against a great Warriors defense. And Horford hit the big three. That's the stuff you want them to do, that they need to do all the time. But that was a really, really nice play.
Before we get to the listeners, Jay, can you hear me? I got a bunch of people in chat saying I'm having very difficult to hear. I don't know why. I've been using the exact same setup I use for every podcast.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I'm going to blame the people in chat for not having ears, but you know what? I'm not going to blame the people in chat. Probably a bad idea to blame your audience. I'm not sure what's going on. I apologize if folks can't hear me out there. I got some folks saying they can hear me, but hopefully we'll have that figured out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, let's go to Grant G. Come on down to The Price is Right. Grant G., how are you doing?
Thank you guys for having me on. It's been a minute, but what an incredibly great eyesore of a game to watch. But that's kind of how you expect these Warriors-Celtics games to play out. Glad to see the Celtics finally win that matchup because it's been kind of frustrating last four games for them against the Warriors. But betting-wise, though, what a weird game. I had the lock of the century last night. Warriors team total under 117.5. Warriors average 115 on the road. Oh, Celtics man. Give up 112 at home. I'm not sure if Scott Van Pelt, I'm not sure if Scott Van Pelt had it on his bad beats of the night, but the foul on Wiggins with 37 seconds left, he goes one of two from the line, or one of two of three from the line, and then the smart turnover to DiVincenzo, and hits that three with 30 seconds left. It was crushing. It was the worst dagger of the night, and Steph hit a full court shot, In that they also lost the 6.5 point cover. It was, I mean, all hope was lost kind of in the fourth quarter anyways, but then them getting back to covering was a huge turnaround. It was just,
I'm so sorry. That's when you bet the under and then see overtime, it's disgusting.
It was
the way the overtime went, just devastating, honestly.
They couldn't hit a thing, and it was like, okay, this might happen. The worst loss is whenever you have false hope.
And I'm not sure Horford even touched Andrew Wiggins either.
It was his thumb. If Horford had a centimeter smaller of a thumb, it would have been not a foul. I know that was a horrible replay, and just be like, you have to be kidding me.
I love the bad beat call, and we're here to help for anybody who wants to vent about their bad beats.
Yeah, I needed this to vent, and I'm just glad that you guys are here for it because it was, oh man, but a great game. Glad to see the Celtics finally win that against the Warriors.
What a call! He just wanted to share his heartbreak. That's all. He just wanted a sounding board. Where people could say they're sorry. That's all.
We're here for the people.
A shoulder to lean on.
We're here to listen, 117.5 and have a 118 and to have that Wiggins three-point foul and the DiVincenzo three, that's tough. And so, if you have any bad beats like that, feel free to jump on stage. If you just have, some sadness in your life, Jay and I are happy to listen. We're here for the people. I think I have the perfect antidote for, a sad moment, a bad beat like that. I think it's time to inject this podcast with a little optimism, a little positivity, a little energy, folks. That's right. We're going to Joshua B. Come on down, Joshua B. How are you feeling after a big win against the Warriors?
All right. Darius Powell! That was an awesome win. That was everything you're supposed to be looking at. First off, I'm going to start with my junk, and then I'm going to lead into some extra. With roughly 4 minutes in the third quarter left and the Celtics down nine, Joe Mazzulla Missoula decided to call a timeout, and I thought to myself, what would the advice of Sam Packard and Jay King be to do in a moment like this with the Celtics down 9? And I thought, you know what? Go Kaizen. Go work out. Go get yourself in some shape. And so I did 10 burpee jacks, which is a jumping jack and a burpee. And then I did 10 push-ups. And then I did 10 Supermans. And then I did 10 sit-ups. And the commercial break happened. And that went down to 8. And then Steve Kerr called the timeout. So I said, well, I might as well not stop now. Let's go do it again. And that happened another 8 times. And sure as fucking enough, the Celtics won the game. Every single time, every timeout, the Celtics had cut the lead just a little bit more. And every timeout, I worked out. And, yeah, so I get to take a little bit of a victory lap on this. I'll tell you another thing I get to take a little bit of a victory lap on. I get to take a little bit of a victory lap on the fact that we have the best record in the league. Now, how do I mean that? Do I mean it by overall? Do I mean it at home? Do I mean it on the road? I mean it all of the above. We have a four-game cushion in the Eastern Conference as we sit here talking right now. The Brooklyn Nets are without Kevin Durant. Chris Middleton is here. He's there. He's everywhere. And the defending championship, Golden State Warriors, the defending champions, just lost a game that they were trying. And if you don't believe that they were trying, go check the minutes. Go check the rotations. One team played nine people, the other team played 8. And the team that played 8, the team with the tight rotation, was the Golden State Warriors. They wanted that game. Now,
to be fair, Tatum played like 100 minutes.
Sure. And to be fair, Steph Curry played 43. But the point isn't that. The point is that both teams were looking at this game to win. It was an electric atmosphere. And all you Celtics fans, I want to talk to like the down people in our group, the people who are sad. Here's a news flash. Both teams want to win, so both teams are going to play hard. And when you have two teams that are talented, and let's just, for instance, say the two teams that were last in the NBA Finals, just expect it to not look beautiful. It's never going to look beautiful. Even when Steph Curry drains a half-court shot, like, you're never going to see the Golden State Warriors not try against the Celtics. They both wanted to win. So, yeah, I'm sorry that it wasn't a 35-point win, but this was by far the Celtics' best win of the season. And Draymond Green, I have a message for you. Last year in Game 1, afterwards, you said, well, listen, if the Celtics are going to drain their threes, then there's nothing we can do. And, you know, you just got to tip their hat to them. But we don't think they're going to drain their threes, and we think we can beat them when they don't. I'm here to remind you that last night we sucked from three, but we could have whatever we wanted in the post. We should have hit that spam button over and over and over again. Ever since the moment Al Horford told Andrew Wiggins that he was too small, did the too small gesture on him in the first quarter, we could have dominated them, and we did dominate them. We dominated them in the paint in rebounds, 60-30, I think that was the number, and we dominated them in points in the paint at 52. I think that you're a little wrong, Jay King. I think that we got everywhere that we wanted to. We overcame the Dementors. We casted our Patronum, and your article, by the way, last night was fantastic. It was.
Thank you, sir.
This is the best win that the Celtics had. When we go and we meet the Warriors in the finals, if we meet the number 9 seeded Warriors in the NBA Finals again, they're going to remember this, and so are we. We are better than the Warriors. We were better than them last night, and we will be better than them going forward. Thanks for giving me the time to speak. This is an awesome win. Pump it up, guys.
Josh is fired up today.
Normally I like hang up on callers. Josh signed off himself, which I appreciate.
Josh just came in and dropped the mic and then left. That was it.
I do like the image of him just like frantically working out for every single timeout in that game. Joshua B is going to be pumped and jacked if he continues to do that. Yeah, Kaizen, he got incrementally better. The Celtics did slowly trim that lead until they put themselves in a position to win at the end of the game. They did go away from, I guess, getting the things in the paint. I don't know if I necessarily completely agree with Joshua B's assessment that like the Celtics could get anything they wanted in the post. They're just not a post-up team. And like when they decidedly went smaller with Malcolm Brogdon, and I just don't think you're going to see a lot of post-ups after that. But I do agree. It's a very good win for the Celtics in the terms of the fact that they shot 31% from three, less than 40% from the field, and still found a way to win with their defense. Don't ask Joe Mazzulla after the game about the team having a winning just with their defense or a winning on a night with their offense. What he had some sort of response to B-Rob, who tried to ask a question like that. He's like, we're top five in league, top five defense, top five offense. We're a great defensive team. And it was just like, and he immediately, I love it when Joe Mazzulla just runs off the Celtics' current rankings. And he's like, we're top two in expected, top five in normal. We're a great defensive team and we're going to win ugly. And it was just, I keep on getting more and more entertained by the Joe Mazzulla press, post-game press conference experience. He's a funny guy.
It's like he takes personal offense to questions that he believes put down the Celtics defense. And in his defense, they are rounding into, just like everyone thought, they are rounding into an elite defense. They're up to fifth in defensive rating. They are climbing that leaderboard pretty steadily and have been ever since Robert Williams got back. They are first in defensive rebound rate, which is kind of wild considering how small they've played a lot of the time.
How much of that is just Jason Tatum being a giant man and being able to grab 19 rebounds? Like, he had 17 defensive rebounds last night, and I felt like he made a point of emphasis of, like, I'm going up and grabbing the hell out of this one, old school Terry Rozier style.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown is averaging 7 rebounds a game. And then they're able to switch and stay out of rotation and be able to box out guys. Marcus Smart is just a box-out demon against bigger guys. But for them to play as small as they have and still lead the league right now in defensive rebound rate and have Robert Williams miss most of the season, like, that's a kind of eye-opening stat that I never would have expected coming into this season. Even last year with Robert Williams playing more games, they were 16th in defensive rebound rate. So they've really shored things up on that front. And that was one of kind of the focuses that Mazzulla pointed out earlier this season, is that they need a rebound. They've done it better than anybody. So he is right that they're going to win ugly, but it is funny how he gets like almost combative when faced with the idea that the Celtics haven't won ugly very often this season. They were literally 0-5 when they shot less than 42% from the field before last night. So, Joe, you really haven't won that ugly. That was the ugliest win of the season.
He's very combative initially. Like, I feel like he's just constantly in combat mode.
He's just a competitive motherfucker is what I think it is.
But then after, like, the press conference is, like, officially over, you see him go up to, like, the reporters that he had, like, a combative exchange with. And then he explains what he was trying to say, and then they usually like have a nice laugh about it. And so it's like, it's not his intent to be combative. It's just like the lights are on Joe Mazzulla, and he's in it. He's gonna fight. He's gonna fight for his team. And then he kind of understands, oh, maybe I shouldn't have handled it that way. And then has a nice smoothing over with the reporters. Everyone gets has a nice laugh, and everyone gets to do their job. It's an interesting post game dynamic that I've never really encountered before, but it makes me laugh. Every post game I've sat in on, and I've decided to sit in on the post games more and more now that I had less school over break. But like, it's entertaining. It's just pure I laugh every single Joe Mazzulla post game press conference.
And he's so sarcastic that sometimes you don't know whether he's being sarcastic or not. Like
you can't tell by his tone of like whether or not he's messing with the reporter or he's just like being kind of mean, and it's like hard to decipher.
good times with Joe Mazzulla. It was also funny when before the game he was asked about like what would the reaction would be if they lost the Warriors, and he's like, I'm sure none of you guys will overreact one way or the other. Because if they had lost that game, oh man, the overreaction would have been crazy. Or the reaction, whatever. Maybe it would have been warranted, because I do think in some ways the Warriors' demons are real. Like they see the Warriors and just kind of short circuit a little bit. But they overcame it. They overcame it. We haven't really talked about Malcolm Brogdon. I thought, even though he went 5 for 15 and missed some bunnies, I thought he was really important to their win. Like, just really important. I felt like we saw playoff Malcolm Brogdon. Even though he wasn't part of the finals series last year, obviously, he had a little extra. He had more juice than usual for that one. The block he had of Jordan
Poole. His block was huge.
Where Jordan Poole beat him to the hoop, and then he just recovered and blocked it. Like, that was an awesome, awesome play. He was really huge on the offensive glass in moments when the Celtics were, like, teetering and needed plays. I just felt Malcolm Brogdon, even though he didn't have one of his most efficient games at all, was just really important for the Celtics and keeping them steady when their offense went away, just making little plays like the ones we just mentioned. He played 36 minutes, which was by far the most he's played all season. I think 32 was his most before that. And so that was just another sign the Celtics treated it more like a playoff game than a regular season game. Malcolm Brogdon with 36 minutes, a guy they've tried to manage all year, a guy they've tried to keep his minutes down all year, but they needed him on the court. And he's important. The Warrior series is the reason they went and got him, right? Because they realized they needed more options to play small. And Derek White was 0 for 6. And obviously he can help you in other ways, but he was having one of those nights where, like, even open threes were difficult. And Malcolm Brogdon just kind of came in, ran offense, made huge plays. And, like, that's why they got Malcolm Brogdon. For games like that, when the other team goes small and they have to go small, and he gives them just another dynamic that they didn't have last season.
Yeah, you mentioned the two kind of, he had two offensive rebounds, and they both led to points. They're just huge moments for the Celtics when they were really struggling. And one of the big things that kind of started the Celtics kind of creeping back into this game, Marcus Smart did a drive, like spin move on Steph Curry, and kicked it back out to Malcolm Brogdon, who hit an open three. He was 3 for 8 from three, but, like, I feel like all three threes were pretty important, and especially that one to get back in the game. It's a huge luxury for the Celtics to kind of be able to go small and go with him. And as good as Derek White has been, and I have been amazed by Derek White, and actually one of my favorite things is watching Derek White kind of, like, run around and try and track Steph Curry. We didn't get as much of that.
That
in
is a beautiful
game.
Thing.
But because it was just like Brogdon felt like they felt like the Celtics needed more on the offensive end, and Brogdon just with his shooting and playmaking is just that much better than White. But it's like such a luxury for the Celtics to have. Was like when they go small, they could go with the offensive minded guard in Brogdon. They could go with a defensive minded guard in White. And yeah, this is exactly why they brought him in for a team when you're playing a great defense like the Warriors have, to kind of be able to just dip into your bench and like, all right, Malcolm, 35 minutes, 36 minutes from you. And it's just kind of fits in seamlessly and works out well. That's just like a huge thing for the Celtics moving forward.
Yeah. And they haven't been fully healthy a lot. And so this was one of the first times all season they've had everybody available and Robert Williams available to play more than like 20 minutes. So the rotation, I thought, was kind of interesting. Just what they did with the bench. Sam Hauser didn't play at all. Basically, I think the first time all season he's been out of the rotation entirely. Derek White, only 17 minutes. Grant Williams, only 13 minutes, which was interesting in itself. But they wanted to either be really big with Horford or Robert Williams, or smaller with more guards on the court, which is understandable. Like the Warriors, it's Steph and it's Klay that you've got to guard, really, and Jordan Poole, and those are all guards. And as good as Grant Williams is, like you having guards against those guards. Like you don't need as much the size and physicality when you're the primary threats on the other team are Steph, Poole, and Clay. So it was interesting how they handled the bench. And then it's just a sign, like, when they're fully healthy, when they're right, guys are just going to have to be okay with not playing as many minutes, not getting as many touches as they want. That's even Al Horford. Like, Al Horford played an awesome game. He was just a throwback game. That was playoff Al. And he sat, like, the first 3 minutes of overtime because they went small and had Robert Williams on the court. Al was probably fuming, man. He was probably so mad. He had just fucking swatted two shots, like two huge swats at the end of the fourth quarter. And then Joe Mazzulla was like, yo, Al, sit on the bench, bro. Robert Williams is going in. He was probably tight.
Yeah, but then Robert Williams and came in and had like a great first 2 minutes of overtime. And then he got taken out. He was probably fuming. Or they all have bought into the team mentality and no one was fuming because they were all so locked in on the win. But I think it's one of the big major advantages of this Celtics roster as right now is like matchup dependent. They can go big. They can go small. They have a number of different guys who work in different situations. And so tonight was definitely like not a Grant Williams game, but there are going to be some matchups like when you're playing Giannis or perhaps Jokic where...
Or Durant,
where you had need like more physicality and need a kind of a size, and you're going to have Grant have those more minutes. But they have these guys, White, Brogdon, Williams off the bench, who are each capable of coming in and playing high impact minutes and playing upwards of 30 minutes in a game. And so it feels like the team's pretty locked in. And I don't know, no one's. I don't think anyone's currently complaining about minutes, but it seems like everyone's kind of is more focused on getting the win and understands that depending on the matchup, different players are going to play different minutes.
Yeah, for sure. And that's just going to be how it is. Like, unless you're Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, or probably Marcus Smart, then you're going to have times when you're not on the court when you want to be on the court. We haven't really talked about Smart's game a lot. He threw two extremely dumb passes in the final seconds of overtime. But I felt like when the Warriors were starting to take over that game, the beginning of the third quarter, like the Celtics didn't really have a lot of energy, gave up some easy buckets, just kind of had a really bad start to the third after Steph ended the first half with his wildness. And Smart hit a couple of shots that just kept the Celtics within distance. There was one, I think, 4 minutes into the third quarter, hit a three when the Warriors were up four, and then Warriors went up nine. They went under a screen on him, and he drilled it, even though it was early in the shot clock. Like those were pretty big shots in retrospect, to just kind of keep the Celtics close enough that they could stage a comeback later. Because the Warriors really were threatening to pull away at that point, and they were totally in control of the game.
Yeah, and I thought he had a big bucket to open the overtime. Like he's always done a pretty good job of just like getting to the rim or finding good ways to get into the paint. And yes, he had two absolutely of the most insanely dumb passes I've seen in a while. I'm pretty convinced he threw the second one out of bounds.
It was like they all were Tony from Blue Chips. just shaving points, hurting our guy, whatever caller it was that had the bad beat.
Grant, yeah, just making sure Grant loses that underpick.
Yeah, they needed the Warriors to hit the team over.
But that is why you love and trust. That is why you believe in the Celtics team, who is now 34-12. We have to go. We've been podcasting for a while. Thank you guys for listening to this podcast. Thank you guys for subscribing. Thanks for everyone who joined us live in the Athletic Room. We'll be back next week to talk about the Celtics' 3-game road trip to Toronto and Florida. And thanks for listening to this episode of Anything Is Possible!